Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 201 of Nerd Pride Radio. 201. 201 is the title of an episode of South Park, but also it's the title of an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and Star Trek actually put the name into binary, 11001001. So, you know, obviously Star Trek is way cooler. All right, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a Starfinder slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week, it's Hatchet, my new Ahsoki Technomancer for Starfinder. He is so cool. All right, before I do anything else, it's time for a little feedback. Yeah, a little feedback. This is actually after last episode, episode 200. I had some talk about, you know what? He describes it. My friend Dave responded to this one. And here's his words. He says, from episode 200. You know, your discussion on good movies and your discussion on tribalism actually go together, I think. This thought just came to me, so I'm still working it out. But the idea that we think something is good or bad, and he puts good and bad in quotes there, is often dependent on the tastes and proclivities of the groups that we associate with. I know for me personally, I often talk myself out of liking things or not liking things so that I'm maintaining likes based on those around me. This is not a great way to go about doing things, and I don't like it in myself, but it's one that I find happens with a good amount of regularity. I can imagine that this also happens to other people. I mean, for art to even get, and that's the capitalized art, for art to even get to the point where it is created for mass consumption, it had to get approved and studied by a huge number of people. Someone liked this horrible movie, and if you do like it, you can't possibly be alone in liking that thing. So that's my opinion about art anyway. If you hate something, that's fine, but allow people the opportunity to like it on their own. Tell them the history, tell them how the piece works, but leave the judgment calls, such as, this is the greatest piece of all time, out of the discussion. Just by changing the phrase to maybe, this is my favorite piece, you're giving people the space to formulate their own opinion. So even if they don't like the work, you haven't belittled them for not agreeing with their statement about it being the greatest piece ever. Who cares? Love something, let your love of something infect the people around you that you're talking to, but let them make up their own minds. It works. Okay, first off, thank you, Dave, for your feedback, but second of all, I completely agree. That you put it really well. I also have found myself, and more often when I was younger, but I still do it every once in a while, that there's something that everybody loves it, everybody talks about how great it is and how clever, how whatever, and you feel like you kind of have to like it. I mean, it's the sort of thing that, well, everybody's into it. If I don't like it, I must be missing something. And so you kind of color your judgment with that. And for that matter, as I was talking about last week, the idea that you like something that you know the majority don't, or at least you feel like the majority of people don't like it. And so you feel this need to apologize for actually liking something that's technically a bad film or a bad piece of music or, you know, something that's anyway. And yeah, I've been in that position before too, and I hate it. I hate it when I find myself doing that, when I find myself liking something because I'm supposed to, even though deep down I know it's flawed. I know it's really broken, and I didn't really enjoy that, but I find myself picking out the good qualities of it so I can say that I liked it. And yeah, you gotta kick yourself when you do that. That's just terrible. And I love the phrase you brought in here where, yeah, you don't tell them it's the greatest thing ever or the worst thing ever. You just tell them that you didn't care for it, or you loved this, it's your favorite piece, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to find it the same way. It's just you're stating that this is your opinion of it, and then it gives them the room to go in and see for themselves. And I really, really like that. So thank you. Thank you, Dave. Also, before we get into the meat of the podcast, updates. A question that we often ask here on Nerd Pride Radio is, how awesome is DM Darks? Well, let me tell you how awesome DM Darks is. We were playing Pathfinder this week, and we are in this game. The heroes, that's us, we've been out and about, and we've gained a lot of power and levels, and now we've returned to the hometown, and we have to go back down into the tunnels. We had been down here before, but now there's been some sort of accident, explosion, and part of the road's caved in, and so we're going down underground to explore and see what happened. And we get to an area where there's a stairwell going down, and there's a whole bunch of rubble all over the floor, and so our ranger was leading the group, played by Talvin, and DM Dark says, "Oh yeah, you notice that there's something written on a piece of rubble down there." And so he goes and he grabs the rock and he says, "It's a rock. It's got a picture of a dog on it. In fact, not only does it have a picture of a dog on it, it's a picture of a dog that you drew. You clearly recognize it as your own work." And we're all baffled. We have absolutely no idea what he's talking about. And so he has to explain. He says, "Oh, well, last time you guys were down here, this whole area was blocked off with rubble, and you thought you heard some kind of barking or howling, something that sounded like a dog. And so you didn't have time to deal with it now, but you went ahead and drew a picture of a dog to mark it for later, so if you ever came back, you'd remember, oh yeah, we wanted to check this out." He says, "Well, now, whatever it is something has blown this whole area open. All the rubble is scattered. The way is open for you to go downstairs. And, oh yeah, there's that picture you drew." Now, for those of you who haven't played in this game, that was 4 years ago. 4 years ago, we went down there and Talvin said, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'll make a little dog picture on the wall here so we don't forget this. So we don't forget that that's what was here." And so, sure enough, 4 years later, now in game time, it's only been like 3 or 4 months, but for us playing it, 4 years. And now here's where Pat suddenly breaks out the, "Oh yeah, and your dog picture is still there, but now it's all broken open." And we were all floored. Had we been playing in person, it would have warranted a round of applause. So I bring it here to let you guys know that how awesome is DM Darks? He is so awesome. What? Seriously, had my players written something down on the wall of a dungeon 4 years ago, would I remember that to bring it back up to them and have that little Easter egg in there? No chance would I have my notes that complete. And yet there he was. So anyway, thank you, Pat. We appreciate it. You're awesome. All right. Now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. The very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And my master list is overflowing. I have got so much stuff, and I've still got an upcoming Awesome in the 80s episode to do with Aiden, where we're going to do American Werewolf in London. I took all my notes down and I was going to do time travel, but I had so much stuff that is pressing right now that maybe I'll do time travel this episode if there's time at the end, but I'm pretty sure there won't be. But I was going to talk about time travel movies, but there are so many other things to talk about. I don't know that I can get to it yet. So let's get on with it. First up, oh, it's my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games, if it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. Me and my boys played some Starfinder this week, and it was really good. We had a good time. The setting is, I mean, to me, I'm still overwhelmed with the setting that they've created, and I know that I've only just gotten the barest taste of it. It's a couple of chapters at the back of the core rulebook, so it's not even, it's barely complete yet, and yet there's so much to it, and you can see that they have a whole ton of stuff already developed. They just have to get the books published to get them out to us. And so I'm really excited about all that. The flavor is really cool, and it's actually really easy for me to narrate into and start giving them examples of stuff that's around. That, you know, they're in the Absalom Station. It's the central space station of this world. And Everything comes and goes through here. And so to get them, you know, they're down in the dirty underbelly of Absalom Station, and, you know, they're going to some, you know, dirty pawn shop in a really poor neighborhood, and there's, you know, drug addicts, and there's thugs, and there's, and just the setting is so rich that it was really easy to add in some details of, you know, the grime and the corruption and the stuff like that. And they bought into it. They were totally in on this. They had no problem getting into character. I'm really liking it. I cannot wait for more of the flavor books to come out because they are so cool. Now, for those of you who have played Pathfinder or even Dungeons and Dragons before, to give you just a little bit of a comparison, with Starfinder, the changes that they've made to it, they worked apparently really hard on keeping your total bonuses really low when you start out at first level. And so, it's just, and again, man, if you're not familiar with Pathfinder, you're not familiar with Dungeons and Dragons role-playing games in general, yeah, maybe skip to the next section because this is all going to be technical talk. But, they have capped off the Starfinder abilities at 18 instead of 20. So already you're a bit off from where people are used to being at Pathfinder. We're so used to having high stats and you know, having a 20 in there some, you know, usually, and that kind of thing. But with the character creation method they have for Starfinder, not only are you capped at 18, but really a lot of times, I would say at least half the characters, 16 is the highest stat that they really have because you've got so few points to divide up. And so you wind up not having all of these really high abilities right at the beginning, just based on your high ability bonuses. And so, it's really kind of nice. It's weird. It's something to get used to. But even the way they've tied everything to levels and kind of limited what you can start with. I mean, we've got a team that is starting off with armor classes of everyone on the team is like 11 to 15 at the very highest. And, you know, 15 or 16 would be really unusual. Most people are running with an armor class of 12, 13, you know, something like that, which again takes some getting used to it because it means that, hitting people really easy. Like people get hit all the time, and critical hits that do double damage or worse. Critical hits are also a lot easier because you don't have to confirm them. If you roll a 20, you got a crit, and that's it. There's no further step, which means damage is really cheap and really easy. Fortunately, most of the first level, second level weapons aren't dealing that much damage, but even in this first battle that my kids had, I mean, they're fighting, you know, the big villain for this segment. It's a ghoul. It's not even anything really powerful, but it's a ghoul, and she's got three thugs with her, and everybody got hurt. Everybody got hurt. And in fact, the very first hit, Aiden's character almost got taken out of the combat in one shot. If it had been anyone else on the team, they would have been out. And so it was, very intense, and it put the players on edge, and they were actually really worried for their own safety, which made things, really awesome. But it is, it takes some getting used to. If you're used to Pathfinder, if you're used to Dungeons and Dragons, you're going to have to prepare yourself. It's going to be a little bit different. I mean, the rules seem the same. They seem very close, but in actual play, it's different. So, haven't tried doing, Starship Combat yet. I think is going to happen in the very next session we play. And also, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I just created my own space rat. He's going to be a technomancer, and he is a technomancer, and he's going to be a swashbuckler, and he's going to be awesome. And I'm really excited to play this dude. And, hopefully we get that going soon because my friend Kaz is going to run that game, and we're going to do it online. And he says it's going to be a one shot. So maybe two or three sessions that we'll play this thing out. And I'm looking forward to it. So I should have all sorts of stuff to report about Starfinder coming up, which, yeah. If you're already sick of Starfinder, maybe you should find another podcast because I'm going to talk about it a lot. I love this game. And as long as I'm at the gaming table, really quick, if you are into Magic the Gathering, if you've played Magic the Gathering, if you're a fan at all, and you haven't seen this video, go to YouTube and search for Dana Fisher Las Vegas Grand Prix. This was something that the very awesome DM Darks mentioned to me while we were at Gen Con, and I just finally looked it up this week, and this thing is amazing. Dana Fisher is a 6-year-old girl who is a wizard at Magic the Gathering. And it just, like, I tuned into this video and I'm like, it's an hour long? Seriously? I'm going to watch someone play Magic for an hour. And then suddenly a half hour into it, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I've already watched a half hour of this. Where'd the time go? But she's good. She's, like I say, 6-year-old girl. Her hands are so tiny with these cards that her dad has to sit next to her to shuffle stuff for her because she can't handle them, to do that. And yet she's really good at it. She was playing an elf deck and she's playing against some guy with a burn deck and she just mopped up the floor with him. I mean, the first round, it wasn't even a challenge. And it was fascinating to watch. So, if you're interested in Magic the Gathering, check out Dana Fisher. It was a really cute video. And like I say, she's really good, especially for being 6. So, all right. That's it for the gaming table. Next up, Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something because you're actually going to learn something today. Well, maybe you won't. Maybe you knew this already. I was just studying science with my son Elijah, and this is 8th grade science, and I learned two things today that I did not know and I really should have. So first off, a parsec, which is a measure of distance, as all of us Star Wars pedants know. Sticklers for detail. That's us. Parsec is a measure of distance. And what I didn't know is where it comes from. A parsec is, the term parsec comes from parallax second. So when you're measuring, all right, parallax is specifically how far something apparently moves in the sky when we're on one side of the sun, as opposed to the Earth has now traveled 6 months and we're now on the other side of the sun, and the slight difference in position that an object has against the background stars from one side of the sun to the other, that's it, its movement of parallax. All right. And you wind up measuring the angle of parallax. So how far did it move? What angle of the sky is that? All right. Are you following me so far? It's really complicated. And so you measure how far the thing appears to move, and an item that moves, that appears to move 1 arc second across the sky, which an arc second is a second, is just a teeny tiny fraction of a degree. So it's a teeny tiny bit of movement. But anything that appears to move 1 arc second is now 1 parsec away, 1 parallax second in distance. And then if you want to calculate distances to other stuff, it's an inverse relationship. So the larger the movement it has, the closer it is to us. So if it moves 2 seconds, well, now it's only half a parsec away. If it moves 3 seconds, it's a third of a parsec away. And vice versa. If you go out further distances, like if you wanted the Millennium Falcon to do it in under 12 parsecs, that would mean it only moves 1/12 of a second out there. And so that's what a parsec means. I had no idea. And that's why that parsec measured from the angle in the sky, 1 parallax second, 1 parsec, comes up to 3.26 light years. So there you go. Now, that was the first thing I learned. The second thing I learned is the difference. Well, I already knew the difference between apparent magnitude and absolute magnitude of stars. The apparent magnitude is how bright that star appears to be to us here on Earth, and the absolute magnitude is how bright it actually is. And as we're reading about it, I was actually thinking in my mind, well, wait a minute, but absolute brightness as measured from where? That's a great question. And then it turns out the answer was right there in the text. The absolute magnitude is how bright that sucker would appear to be if it was 32.6 light years away from us. And at this point, I hadn't learned about the parsec, and so I'm like, 32.6 light years? What an arbitrary Seemann number. I don't get it. And it turns out, oh, that's exactly 10 parsecs. So your absolute magnitude is how bright this sucker would look if it was exactly 10 parsecs away from us. Okay, I learned something. In fact, I learned two things. I thought that was fascinating. But that's it. That's all I got for science. So, all right, what's up next?
And now for something completely different.
That's right, it's time for something completely different. This is just stuff I don't have an official category for yet. All right, here's the deal. Warren the Elephant died. And if you don't know Warren the Elephant, and just for the record, All of the information I'm giving you here is second or third hand. I haven't actually done the research myself, but I heard this story mostly from my wife, and so any errors that I have in telling this are completely mine because I didn't listen very well. So, yes, no, it's all your fault, honey. You. Yeah, she should be better at this. Okay, so the Henry Dorley Zoo is the Omaha Zoo, and it's our zoo. It's the closest one to us. We love going to the Omaha Zoo, and it is a wonderful zoo. It is top-ranked in all sorts of stuff. It's one of the top zoos in the world. They're really cool. They're really cool for lots of reasons, and I've bragged on them a bunch of times in the past. But specifically, we haven't had elephants for a while. We had elephants for a bit, but their enclosure was not great, and it wasn't an awesome spot for them. And so, we were down to, you know, just two elephants left or three elephants left, and one died. And we wound up deciding that, you know, it wasn't fair to leave an elephant alone. They need company. And certainly we didn't want to bring any new elephants into that enclosure because we need to do something better. And so, we haven't had elephants for a while. Well, just recently, like a year or two ago, we've got a new enclosure done, and it's way nicer, and it's really cool for them. And so we brought in six, I think, elephants a while back, and we got to go see them ourselves, and they're really cool. And we love elephants. We love the zoo. And it is, my wife is actually even setting the story straight for me here. I think we got five originally. And then we got another elephant came in through a zoo exchange. But anyway, so we've got a few elephants at the Omaha Zoo, and elephants are awesome. And like I say, there's a much nicer habitat for them, and things are going really well. But then Warren the elephant had a split tusk, and split tusk is really, really bad for him. And it was, you know, they were afraid that, it was going to split all the way down into the root. They were afraid that it was going to get infected. And so, you know, the first thing they did was cut the tusk off, but it turns out the damage to it was too great, and it continued to split, and it was getting worse. And what they needed to do was they needed to sedate him so that they could make a cast, of that part of his face so that they can put on something that will hold it all together, seal it up, some sort of prosthetic for this elephant face. And, when they put Warren under anesthetic, Warren died. And it was really, really tragic. And as I'm hearing this story, my first thought is, wow, terrible for Warren. He was only 7 or 8 years old. I mean, he was not an old elephant at all. And, sad for the other elephants around him because they're such social animals. Sad for the zookeepers. Imagine the doctors. Imagine the people who were directly responsible for trying to get this procedure done and how horrible they must feel about the whole thing. I mean, this is just sad. And the aftermath of this was, because especially as I was thinking about these other poor elephants down there, the aftermath of this is that the zoo kind of just took all of the rules off. Because my first thought was, well, how are they even going to know he's gone? How are they going to know? They left Warren on the table there, or, well, not on a table, I'm sure. They don't have an elephant table. But they left Warren where he was, and they opened all the doors, and instead of keeping all of the elephants, you know, because usually they have specific times where they come in and out, and so they have, you know, certain groups that are supposed to be in certain places at certain times, they just let the elephants go wherever they wanted and let them all come in, and all of the elephants came in to visit Warren. They all saw him there. They all put their trunks up and touched him in some way to acknowledge his passing. They all went out, and they've been huddled together, and they've been doing their elephant mourning. They have been, and so, you know, we're giving them their space. Well, the zoo, I say we, I feel such an ownership here. The zoo is giving them their space and allowing them to work this out and allowing them to mourn properly. And it seems that they're doing that. And it's just very touching and very moving and really sad. And so, Warren the elephant died, and it makes me sad. So, anyway, that's the segment. So, if you're interested in the actual facts of this, look up, Omaha Zoo, Warren the elephant, and I'm sure there are plenty of articles out there that are give a lot more detail than what I've got and probably describe a much more poignant scene, and you can get everything there. But this is what I know third hand, so I give it to you. All right. Next up, science fiction double feature. Science fiction double feature. That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two movie reviews for the same low, low price. I watched two new movies this week, and the first of them was The Big Sick. And I told you last week, I said, wow, if only it was somewhere streaming, I'll be watching for it. I will get it immediately. And sure enough, it was out on all streaming platforms this week. So I watched The Big Sick, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was The Big Sick, if you're not familiar with it, was written by my spirit animal, Kumail Nanjiani, and his amazing wife, Emily V. Gordon. And the two of them, he is a Pakistani stand-up comedian, and she is a white girl from, I can't remember where she's from, darn it. But anyway, their early relationship, this is a movie of how they met and began dating, and then she became really ill at the beginning, and so there's a bunch of stuff between, you know, with his very devout Muslim family and them wanting him to marry a Pakistani girl and her not being a Pakistani girl. And so there was all sorts of stuff in there, and it is very largely autobiographical, but not entirely. It's set in modern day when they actually met, you know, 15 years ago or whatever it was. So it's been modernized, and just from listening to their podcast, The Indoor Kids, and hearing them talk in interviews and other stuff, there's a lot of stuff in here that was, you know, just added in for the movie to strengthen the plot, whatever it was. But there's also a lot of it that, you know, yeah, this may not have been the exact situation, but boy, that's definitely the words that their parents would have said, or this is definitely how they acted towards each other. So it's a very personal film, and it's really good. It is not a funny film. You know, you would think with Kumail being a stand-up comic and her being involved in comedy as well, and you would think that there would be a lot of humor in it, that it would be more of a romantic comedy, and there wasn't a whole lot of humor. Well, there wasn't a whole lot of comedy in that way. They made a lot of jokes, but it was very natural. It was very just part of their relationship, and it was just so entertaining. It was so good, and it's the kind of thing that it's going to make you want to cry a lot, because, you know, it's young love and them having trouble getting together and them working out their issues. And it's really brutal. I mean, they both do, and say some things that, you know, for the heroes, yeah, you know, he's kind of an asshole for a while, and they screw things up, and then, you know, they get it together, and you know, it's going to end well because, well, you know, they wrote it together after, you know, how many years of being happy together. So, you know, it's going to have a good ending ultimately, but still, it is, it's just a very sweet movie, and I highly recommend it. And I think, there's been, you know, a lot of talk about this as a little independent movie, that there's been a lot of talk that they've got a chance at maybe some Oscar recognition or something like that. I think maybe for best original screenplay. I think that's the category that they could really take it in, because it's really well done. And, you know, hey, her parents were played by Ray Romano and Holly Hunter, who were amazing in this movie. And just, anyway, it was really, really fun. And I highly recommend it. And again, I've always liked Kumail. I've always liked his wife. Kumail is my spirit animal. So, you know, go watch it. Give him some cash. Watch the movie. It's very entertaining. You will enjoy it. It is totally worth your time. But the other movie that I just saw, and I just saw this this weekend, because it's opening weekend, so I saw it on Friday, the movie It. Wow. When we went to it, it was, you know, the critics are, you know, it's like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. The audience even is giving it even higher than that. So okay, high expectations. You know, I liked the book. I think the book was flawed in a lot of ways. There was so much unnecessary stuff in the book, but okay. And I thought that the miniseries that they did a couple decades ago, the miniseries was, it was even more flawed. It just didn't, it was made for TV, and so it really wasn't, it didn't delve as deep as it really needed to be effective. But this movie, so solid, so really well done. You guys have seen the ads. You've seen Pennywise the Clown and the creepy balloons, and it's kids in 1989, and there's something terrible stalking this area, and terrible things are happening, and they seem to be the only ones who recognize that something needs to be done. And it's a great film. I saw it with Aiden. Lisa went earlier with a friend from work, and so they saw it at the 7 o'clock show, and they loved it. And so Aiden and I had already been planning on, when they get done, then they can come home and take care of the kids, and we'll go out and take in the late show. And it was packed, absolutely packed, at both shows. And Aiden spent the entire movie squeezing my hand, and he kept looking over at me going, no, no, which I was doing the exact same thing, except I wasn't saying it out loud, but in my head, the entire movie, it's like, no, 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 no. It was so creepy. The kids that are acting in this are all really talented. And other than the one from, Stranger Things, Finn Wolfhard, whatever his name is. Other than Finn, I didn't recognize any of the kids in this film, but I really liked them all. I thought the whole group came together, very believably, and you like them. You just like these kids. It's 1989. That's, I was already in college in 1989, but the 80s, that was my childhood. That was, and so I related to a lot of it. I was glad to see them modernize it. They moved the whole thing 30 years forward from where it was when the book was originally written, which was appropriate. And in fact, all right, I'm so excited as I'm starting to watch the movie. So excited because, all right, if you don't want any spoilers, skip ahead, but this isn't even really a spoiler. The book is written so that there is a story of them as kids and then also a story of them as adults. And the book switches back and forth between the two. So it alternates chapters, getting some of the kid's story and then some of the adult story, and they kind of tie together. And so as I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, it's set in 1989. Okay, well, then that means that, yeah, that would mean that the timing works out that the adult portion will be set modern day. Awesome. This will be perfect. And then they just kept showing the kids. And like over halfway through the film, I'm like, man, when are they going to get to the adults? Because we're running out of film here. I can't imagine how they're going to work in the whole story. This is incredible. And then it gets a little further. And I'm like, they're not going to show the adult portion. Well, then why did they bother setting it in 1989 then? What was the point of that? And then at the very end, we have to wait 2 years for the rest of it. I get it. Okay, cool. But even knowing that, this was such a good movie. I am going to tell you that this version of Pennywise, he beats the holy hell out of the last one. I'm a big Tim Curry fan. I love Tim Curry, but the last, version of it on screen, Tim Curry was, yes, he was Pennywise the Clown, but he was also consistently he was Tim Curry, and you knew he was Tim Curry the whole time you were watching it. And that was part of what made him awesome, but he was Tim Curry. This was Pennywise, and this Pennywise was feral. He was, it's like the difference between maybe this is a little too extreme, but it's like the difference between the campy TV Batman and the Dark Knight Batman. I mean, there's just something primal about it. And this is, that's the difference here. By comparison, the Tim Curry Pennywise seems so sanitized. And then you see this one, and I mean, he's a beast. He is a monster. He is a thing of nightmares. And the whole movie will, if you like horror movies, you're gonna go see this film because it's that good. It is, am I talking it up too much? Yeah, you know what? Let me take some advice from Dave at the beginning of the show and just say, look, I really enjoyed it. You know, maybe it's not your thing, but I really enjoyed it, and I encourage people who like horror to go watch it because I think you might also really enjoy it. If you don't, hey, that's cool, but oh man, this was so good. I had a great time. So anyway, that's my two movies for this week, is The Big Sick and It, both of which, very different movies, but very high recommends from me, because I thoroughly enjoyed myself on both of them. So there you go. And then that's it. I'm not going to do time travel movies till next week because it's too long a segment. Instead, we're going to go straight into the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. If you want to hear me haver on about something, you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. The very first number we have is 89. You know, the whole spiel I was doing there, I could have flipped over the list. I could have rolled down to number 89. Did I do any of that? No, because I'm not interested in efficiency. All right, here we are. It's Mrs. Darks. And Mrs. Darks says, what is your favorite Animaniacs segment? If you don't have one, you should probably watch them on Netflix with the boys. Actually, you should probably do that anyway. All right, way ahead of you. Because we have been watching some Animaniacs with the boys. Not much. We watched a few, and they're not as into it as I was when it was first out. But yeah, Noah likes it. But my favorite Animaniacs segment is, man, that is tough. Back in the day, I would have said Pinky and the Brain. I love Pinky and the Brain. But now when I'm watching them, I mean, I like a lot of stuff they do. But I think Chicken Boo is my favorite from Animaniacs. I still love Chicken Boo. I love the fact that Chicken Boo, what's the matter with you? You don't act like the other chickens do. I love Chicken Boo. It is the thing that I love about it. It's super short, and it is a single joke that they tell over and over and over. I mean, it's the exact same joke every time. It still makes me laugh. I love Chicken Boo. So there. Number 80. Oh, wait, you know what? Hold on. Two things. I just realized I forgot to tell you a story about Animaniacs while I'm at it. And then I realized, oh, I forgot to tell you a story about It. So which one do you want first? Animaniacs? Okay. My son Jacob was born during Animaniacs. I remember this very specifically because the new episodes came out at 3 o'clock, and my wife had been in labor all damn day. All day, like from 8 o'clock in the morning until we've been working on 7-8 hours of this stuff. And yeah, okay, her blood pressure was falling, and well, first it was rising and then it was falling, and we thought she was going to die. But leave that part aside, I suffered as well, because suddenly, oh, it's time to start pushing, just as Animaniacs was about to start. Like, we're in here all day long, and I'm just, you know, flipping through channels. We're finding stuff to watch. I'm being comforting. And then, when does she choose to finally go? Yeah, when Animaniacs comes on. God darn it. So, fortunately, I caught it in reruns, so I guess it wasn't that horrible. But still, you feel for me, don't you? You understand my pain, my suffering? Yeah. So that's he's the only kid that I remember exactly when he was born, because, well, it was during Animaniacs. So all the others, I have vague ideas, because I remember either it was late at night or early morning hours or whatever, but I can't tell you exactly. She can. She's got apparently it was very memorable for her. But see, she's laughing now. All right. But then the other story I forgot to tell is I told you that my wife went to see It with a friend from work. In fact, the teacher right next door to her has the next classroom over, and they work together on a lot of stuff. And so Lisa then says, hey, she said she was going to be into work on Sunday, catching up on some stuff. If we get there before her, do you think we could buy a red balloon and just leave it floating in her classroom for when she gets there? And I'm like, that's really evil, but yeah, we could do that. And so we did. We stopped by the flower shop and asked if we could just have a single red balloon, which they did not question in the least. And so we brought it up and we left it tied up in her room for her to find when she got here. And it worked out really well.
I have to tell about walking to the pharmacy.
Well, yeah. Okay. So I buy the balloon, which is the flower shop is in our grocery store, Hy-Vee. And so after I buy the balloon and I've got this single red balloon and I look over and I'm like, oh, hey, the pharmacy is open. I didn't think they were open till later. Well, I've got some stuff to pick up. I'll go over there and do that. And one of our friends works behind the counter at the pharmacy. And so she comes over, she finds out what we need. And then she says, wow, you know, with that one red balloon, it's like that, the clown from that movie thing. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's what it is. And so I had to explain that, yes, yes, Lisa and her friend went out to see the movie the other night, which apparently she already knew that, went out to see the movie together the other night. So to creep her out, we're going to go put this in her classroom. And everyone thought that was really, really funny and kind of evil, but really funny. And now the best part is we get here, we set it up in our classroom, and we put it kind of like in the little, it's not really an isolation corner, but yeah, it's a place where there's, yeah, sensory break area where if a kid needs some quiet space, he can go in there and then, you know, it's a little closed off from the rest of the classroom. So from where her workstation is, where we know she'll be sitting down to do her stuff, there is a clear view into that. So we set the balloon in there on the floor. So it's, we tied a candy bar to it. So, you know, maybe we would scare her to death, but at least she'd have a candy bar afterwards, right? See, Snickers makes it all better. And so we have it floating there in the sensory break area so that she can't see it when she walks in, but definitely while she's sitting down working, she's going to notice it. And figured that would be the best opportunity for scaring her. And she comes in and she sits down and she is working in there for a good 30 minutes before she finally notices it. And she said the worst part was she looked up and she went, huh, I wonder why he's got a balloon in there. That's weird. And then she goes back to work. And then it occurs to her to think, wait a minute, he shouldn't have a balloon. Boy, but it is kind of creepy. It almost reminds me of the, oh, okay, I get it. And then she had to come over and laugh about it. Her own words, I'm not going to take credit for this, but her own words is, yeah, she would be terrible in a horror movie because by the time she figured out what was going on, she would have already been dead. So, anyway, very cute. All right, so now, did I roll again? I think I did already roll again, and then I backed up. So, yeah, there's a new number here. It's number 80. And 80 on the Podomatic list is... It's from Irish Fan. Hey, I haven't talked to you in a while, Irish Fan. Irish Fan says, double space after periods. I get your point, but after 30 plus years of doing it, I can't stop myself from double tapping the space bar in between sentences. Is there a support group or physical therapy? I want to conform with modern practices, but my muscle memory says otherwise. Is muscle memory a thing, or is it adult BS that coaches tell kids to get them to practice mundane drills in sports? And he asks, he says in parentheses, because I'm one of those coaches now. All right. First off, there's nothing you need to do about your double spacing. If you're going to do it, that's fine. You know what? Most modern word processes will accommodate you. And, you know, if I notice it, I'll just think you're an idiot. There's no big deal. No, I'm kidding. It's no big deal. Nobody really cares that much. Yes, I prefer the single space, but you know what? It's not going to hurt anybody. Now, second off, muscle memory. Muscle memory is absolutely a thing. Absolutely. Because it's, when you get good at something, it's the thing that allows you to perform the task without having to devote your entire brain to it. That is, it's huge. It is, it's why we, how we learn to write. I mean, just one of the most basic things is that's how we learn to write to the point where we no longer have to concentrate on how the letters are formed. You merely think of the word and your hand is already making the letters that make that word. That's muscle memory. And yeah, it is amazingly important and very real. And as my wife points out, it's the reason why, for example, when you're typing, if there's a word that you type a lot, then your muscle memory remembers that word. And even though, you mean to type something else, if it begins the same way, you'll finish it out with the other word. So, for example, the one that gets Lisa all the time is the word assign. And she is so, she gets to A-S-S-I and then she just goes N-G instead of G-N because I-N-G is just, it's just automatic. And so she always wants to say assign, which is something she does often as a teacher, but instead of assign, it's assing. And she gets that all the time. Or the same reason why you're on your drive home and you know you're going to go over here first, and then you don't. You just drive home because your driving is just automatic. You don't even have to think about it. And so even though you completely meant to go somewhere else, once you're in the process of moving, you know, the horse knows the way home. You just follow along, and it just, it's automatic. The mental processes can become automated as well. This is actually, I have this on the master list and I hadn't brought it up, but I'll just give you an example of it. That, have you ever read a page and then you get to the end of the page and realize you have absolutely no idea what it says? You know, you read it. You know, your mind vocalized those words in your head to read them, or how, whatever your mental processes are for reading, but you know your brain went through all the processes of reading it, but you were distracted by something else, so the reading was just automated, and it didn't register on your conscious mind at all. It didn't get stored in any sort of memory at all. You have no idea what was on that page. That's the same sort of automatic process, a muscle memory, a mental muscle memory, if you want to call it that. And the reason I had it on my master list is I remembered, God, when I was 7 years old, I used to do this on purpose. When I was seven, I loved to count. Counting was awesome. 6 and 7 years old, I would count a lot. And sometimes laying in bed just to go to sleep, I would just see how high I could count because I just liked counting. And after a while, especially if I got sent in for a nap, I hate taking a nap. I'm not going to go to sleep. I'll sit here and count in my head just because it's fun.
And you still do
it? Yeah, so I still do it. Yes. Shut up. So, now I do it in binary on my fingers, but it's still, I love counting. And so, don't make fun of me. When I was little, we all like different things. You are absolutely correct. I remember laying down, especially for a nap. I would lay down for a nap and I would start counting. And then the coolest thing happened when I realized that I just went from like 110 to 250, and I don't remember any of the numbers in between. Like, I know my mind was still counting, but it's like some meditative thing where, yeah, my mind is still counting, and the numbers are just racking up automatically in my head, but I'm not paying attention to them anymore because the other part of my mind has wandered. Counting is so automatic, I don't have to think about it to do it. And so, you know, all in inside my own head, I'm counting while thinking about other things at the same time. And I thought that was the coolest thing. I mean, God, when I was 6 or 7 and I realized, oh, my mind can do 2 things at once. How cool is that? And so then I would try and make it happen, and it's really tough to force it. So I would spend hours. Well, it felt like hours. It was probably mere minutes in bed, but I would spend hours in bed counting up, just waiting for that magic moment when, like, oh, there it was. I wasn't thinking about it anymore. It was automatic, and it was so cool. It didn't happen often because it takes a lot of work to, you can't just consciously decide you're going to think about 2 things at once. It really, or at least you can't when you're 7. But man, it was so cool. So anyway. Now I can't remember crap. God, I'm lucky to be able to think about 1 thing at a time. Number 16. 16 is from, oh, there it is. 16 is from Kaz. Well, hey there, Kaz. Kaz says, ChessX Tiny Dice. You should get a pair of die tens so you can update R2 with them. Now, give us your favorite R2 moment from the original trilogy. Oh, wow. Yes, I should get a pair of tiny die tens to go in here so that they quit getting stuck. You're absolutely correct. But my favorite R2 moment from the original trilogy. That's a tough one because R2 always played the straight man and actually, it was an odd combination because you would think that C-3PO being so uptight, you would think he would be the straight man in this comedy duo. But the problem is that R2 doesn't get the punchlines because, well, R2 doesn't talk. And so therefore, yes, C-3PO might technically be the straight man, but he also has to deliver his own punchlines against himself because he has to translate for R2. My favorite R2 moment, I think I got 2 of them. One, and these are both from the first movie, is when they're in the desert and on Tatooine and R2 decides that he's going to head off by himself and he's not listening to C-3PO anymore. And this is how they get separated and he gets picked up by Jawas and C-3PO is throwing a fit about, fine, go off on your own. And I like that because I liked I liked that it demonstrated that R2 wasn't just a robot, because again, when he has no facial expression, no vocal inflection that we can latch onto, there's nothing about him. He's a trash can with legs. That's really all he is, and he just rolls around. And that moment was really brilliant storytelling, in that we saw that he has his own motivations, and we saw that he has his own mind, and it was actually really cool to see that happen in something that is an almost completely inanimate piece of metal. So I really like that. And then I also like when he plugged into the Death Star and starts doing some hacking stuff in there, because it was a very active thing, and it was cool to see R2 have skills that were being useful to the team, and I enjoyed that as well. So there you go. Those are my two favorite R2 moments from the first movie. Number 60. And 60 is from... it's from my son Noah, okay? Noah asks... oh, man, have I answered this one before? If you could have any president, alive or dead, support your podcast, who would you pick? I'm torn. I don't want a dead president supporting my podcast, because there's just all sorts of creepy zombie issues to work out with that. And the simple fact that, that James Buchanan has risen from his grave to endorse a podcast, I think there would be way more attention to the zombie president than there would be to my podcast, and it would detract from me, so that would be bad. But, oh man, it depends. I mean, look, how cool would it be to have Barack Obama come just support my podcast, just to tweet out about how much he loves listening to Nerd Pride Radio? Wouldn't that be awesome? Although, man, this is tough, because Trump could do the same thing. I mean, I don't necessarily want Trump's endorsement, but man, if I just want listeners, if I'm just looking for the merchandising opportunities, Trump could really score big for me here. And the problem is with either of them, as polarized as our nation is right now, by having, one of these presidents, support my podcast, I've now alienated a whole ton of other people. But, you know what? If I have to pick, I'm going to say Barack Obama. I just think that would be really cool. I think he would be really fun to hang out with. He's just, as a dude, I think he would be super cool to hang out with. But anyway, that's the best I got. Number 28. And 28 is from Jacob, my other son. Well, one of my other sons. I have many. Jacob says, you, symbiotic, patriotic, slam butt neck, right? Yeah, okay, I get it. Now, I don't even know if those are the right lyrics, but yes, these have all been lyrics from the end of the world as we know it. And, I'm gonna have to say, in this particular case, yes, right. I agree. 30. 30 is from Kyle. Kyle says, I've stopped watching most kids' movies. Jungle Book, Dory, hell, I've never seen a Cars movie, and I turned off Toy Story 3 halfway through. Am I missing anything? Nah, not terribly. I mean, some of those are good. Finding Dory, if you saw Finding Nemo, then you saw Finding Dory. Dory was good. It wasn't as good as Nemo, but it was a good movie. But, is your life incomplete because you haven't seen it? No, not really. Toy Story 3? Look, I love Toy Story 3. The original Toy Story is still my favorite, but Toy Story 3 was really good. I can't believe you turned it off. But, okay, maybe you have no soul. That's fine. Yeah, we just recently watched Moana. I thought Moana was a good movie. But again, none of these recently have been life-changing, absolute cultural touchstone, must-see sorts of movies. If we had a new Finding Nemo, a new Toy Story, there are some of those they were, cultural landmarks. These are things that you really would have had to have seen when they came out, even if you didn't have kids that age, which you do, but even if you didn't have kids that age, that there are some kids movies that I think are really essential. I mean, they're really, you know, you don't have to watch anything, but man, some of them are really good. And again, cultural touchstones. But have we had one of those in a while? I don't think so. I don't think there's been anything in the last decade that I would really say was absolutely essential. Yeah. Oh no, Holes is way old. But I love the movie Holes. Oh man. I love the movie Holes. I love the book Holes, but Holes is absolutely the best thing Shia LaBeouf ever did. That is a great movie. But yeah, no, you're not missing anything terribly. I mean, you know, you've always got to make choices with your viewing habits and dollars. And, you know, if you want to devote your time to something different, you're going to find stuff that is equally good, if not better. So, you know, it's not like you're missing out yet. But you know what? If something comes along, if a kid's movie comes along that you absolutely have to see, a must see, I'll let you know. I'll bring it to you here, and then that way you don't have to waste your time hunting around, you know, afraid you're going to miss something. I'll get it for you. Number 19. And 19, this will be our last one. 19 is from Stan. If you could be any kind of disease, what disease would you be? I would be the human metahuman, vampiric virus from Shadowrun, just because I think that sucker is really cool. Is that the right one? HMHVV, human metahuman vampiric virus. Yeah, I think that's the right name for it. I mean, yeah, okay, it turns humans into vampires. It turns Sasquatches into horrible Wendigo creatures. It turns the trolls into the Zunuqua. It was pretty cool. So. Oh, you guys are missing out. My wife had me pause the podcast so she could give me her answer, and now I'm not allowed to tell you her answer because it was dirty. So, right? No. Right. Obviously. Yeah. Well, yeah, but they'll know it was your idea. So, yeah, she wasn't saying that she would choose this. She would say she thought I would. But again, I'm going to leave it a mystery. You guys can just wonder what she said, and it'll be much worse in your heads than anything she actually said out loud. So, there you go. All right, that is the end of the Podomatic, which means it's time for GLaDOS to give you a recap of the episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. My opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage. She Blinded Me with Science is performed by William Shatner. And I did movies too. There it is. Science Fiction Double Feature by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks Versus, Me Like Trivia, Nerd Pride Radio itself, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to it in iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use, and write us awesome reviews or crappy reviews, doesn't matter, just give us 5 stars. That's what makes the difference. But if you want to do something super nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends, because if you're enjoying it, seriously spread the word and let other people enjoy it as well. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so please send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you've got a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. Especially since, oh man, now that we've crossed over 200, Wikipedia is less informative about numbers than it used to be. I'm actually going to have to do real work. Ooh, this is hard. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is to come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there, send me a message, we will hang out together and become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook and I post up, hey guys, I'm recording now. Anything you say, I will read off at the very end of the podcast, which is what I'm doing right now. We're going to start off with my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And I said episode 201, Betray Me. And the first one is from Talvin. Talvin says, oh, happy birthday to Kaz a day late. Yeah, happy birthday, Kaz. You're old. Wow. I hope you had a good time, man. Then also Talvin says, are you still going? Why? All right, yes. Yes, I am still going because I like to start the listener betrayal. I posted up because it's – how long ago was this? I posted it at about 6 o'clock, and he says, why, at 7:45. Yeah, I started up because – especially when I'm recording here at school, I have to go out in the hallway to do it because there's no reception in the classroom. And so I get started, but then I come in and I finish setting up the notes and this kind of stuff. And it maybe sometimes takes me an extra 15 minutes. And then as I'm recording, sometimes I stop it here and there because Lisa needs my help with something or we just have something to discuss about. Someone calls or interrupts, whatever. And you guys don't hear any of that stuff because I just hit pause. And so it goes along. The actual recording time. So yeah, it's been an hour and 45 minutes since I posted up listener betrayal, but my recording right now says we're at the hour mark. So we were pretty close to that once I do the editing. So, you know, that's why. And then, but an excellent question. Let's see. Next up, oh, it's Talvin. Talvin says, how awesome is DM Darks? Yeah, he's all right. Next up is Talvin. Talvin says, bed, wed, or behead, Brat Pack Edition. Molly Ringwald, Ally Sheedy, Demi Moore. Wow. I can't believe you're going to make me do this. All right. Where do I go with this one? I don't know how to judge this one. I really don't. I think, you know what? I think I am going to bed Demi Moore and wed Molly Ringwald because I had such a crush on her back in the day. And then that just leaves Ally Sheedy is going to have to get killed. And that answer would have been different, you know, if you had asked me 10 years ago or 20 years ago. But for right now, yeah, no, that's where I'm going to have to stand on that one. And then he also extends this and says, okay, now the male edition. Anthony Michael Hall, Rob Lowe, or Emilio Estevez. Okay. I will marry Anthony Michael Hall because I am so egomaniacal that I want to marry myself. I was Anthony Michael Hall, and I will make no bones about that. So I have married him. You have to bed Rob Lowe because he's Rob Lowe. Have you seen him? He's Rob Lowe. All right? And then poor Emilio Estevez. Yeah, sorry, dude. You're gone. That's just how it works. All right. Next up is Eliahad. Eliahad says, make a character class using your least favorite Starfinder race and least favorite Starfinder class. I think I am still going to go with Vesk is still my least favorite race. And so I'll go with Vesk. My least favorite class is, I think it's still Salarian. I'm going to go with the Vesk Salarian. And I'm okay with that. I think I described this guy on the last episode, my Vesk Salarian, who is, the giant lizard creature with the power of a black hole behind him. And so, he has these, claws made out of whatever dark material the force embodies itself as in this world. And then, he has the ability to act as a black hole and suck people towards him. So they're all being sucked into the ravening maw of his claws. That's a really mixed metaphor, but okay, you get it. But he then says, okay, now make a character using your favorite race and class. All right, this one's easy because my favorite race is the Ahsoki, the rat people. I love the rat people. They're the only small race in Starfinder, and they are just super cool. And, yeah, I get a lot of people make comparisons to, you know, you play a rat folk and you're basically playing Rocket Raccoon, and I don't think so. But I really like the rat folk. And so I will combine that with my favorite class, which is the envoy class, because that's how you get to be a bard in the Starfinder world. In fact, I would probably be an envoy and on top of it be an icon as well. And it would be all social skills all the time. It would be me playing a tiny rat bard, and it would be really spectacular. I love that concept. That's absolutely what I would play. If given my druthers, but since I've been playing a bard in Pathfinder for the last 4 years, and the envoy is really just the sci-fi version of that, so it's not all the singing and dancing. Unless you want it to be singing and dancing, it certainly can be. But the envoy it's the social character, with the leadership skills and the jack of all trades kind of nature and the ability to motivate others and support others and that kind of stuff. And that just appeals to me so much. But because I've already done that for so long, and we've got a couple more years of this game left, that's why I'm choosing not to play an envoy right now. Man, everything about the envoy class is calling to me. I so want to play it, but I'm going to wait. I'm going to put that off a little bit, and we'll save it for another day. All right, next up, that was a lie I had, so my next one is, done. All right, so we're all finished with my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds, and so that means we can move over to Facebook. And Facebook has, a bunch. First up, from Ron. Ron says, wowzers, hope you're having a fun day on your Sunday. I am taking off 2 days for Irmageddon. Irmageddon. Oh, that's right. I forgot you're in the path of the storm. That is terrible. I hope everything is well for you down there. So best case scenario, I will be doing board gaming with the family since school is out for the next 2 days due to weather. Well, assuming that you don't blow away and assuming that everything is locked down tight and you guys are safe, 2 days of board gaming is not the worst way you could have spent things. So I hope you are safe and things go well. So Mike, do you have a 72-hour pantry ready? Don't cop out. Go get it done. You know what? We don't have a 72-hour pantry because it's not as formalized as that, but we generally do our shopping for our menu, which is usually 7 meals on the menu at a time. And so we have, is it 7 now? Yeah, it's 7 because Jacob's not around, but we have 7 meals on the menu, and we usually have stocked up for that. And even if we didn't have all 7 meals in there, then we've still got a freezer full of meat and we have other stuff. And we don't have hurricanes to worry about, fortunately for us. The worst thing that could happen to us, we were just discussing this with the kids, is we can possibly get snowed in during the winter. And so we always make sure that, you know, if it looks like bad weather is coming, yeah, we make sure that our menu's caught up and that we've gone out and gotten all the things that we need for the next, you know, 7 meals. But yeah, we even if the worst happens with the weather, we live on an emergency snow route. So once the plows get out, our street is the first one to get plowed. We don't. It's mandatory for ambulances and emergency vehicles. They come down. They're like 6-7 blocks north of us, and so our road is an important throughfare for those. So we get cleared out pretty quickly. But we'll make sure we get stocked up before snowstorms, which are never as bad as everyone predicts. But we're always ready just in case. And then during the summer, I mean, really, the worst that's going to happen is tornadoes, and this is what we were talking about with the kids. We were comparing the difference because we were looking at the devastation of Harvey and the stuff that has already hit in the Caribbean with Irma, and that people are evacuating the area, battening down the hatches, and we're making the comparison between our storms and their storms. And yeah, that's terrifying, knowing that you know, when this comes through, if you're at the eye of this hurricane, you know, you can be pretty much guaranteed that your neighborhood's going to be gone. I just can't even imagine that. I can't even picture how that feels. Because for us, yeah, we have tornadoes. And every once in a while, you get the tornado warning. Tornadoes are on the ground. Sometimes, you know, some freak thing happens and there's like 3, 4, 5 tornadoes all going at once. It's happened. And we know people who have been hit by tornadoes and have lost their houses. Literally know a guy who was actually hit by a tornado. He was hit by a dumpster that was flying. It was and he lived and he's fine now. But yeah, there's scary things that can happen with tornadoes, but there's also this feeling of it that when they start coming, yeah, you go take shelter, you get yourself prepared, but then it's just, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. It's not something you have to sit here and wait out for days. I mean, it's like within an hour, it's either over or it's not. You know, you don't, there's nothing, you know, there's no preparing for, you know, having to stock up and be ready and all this, because if the tornado comes through, like I say, you roll the dice and, oh, yeah, look at that, didn't hit us, because it's such a long shot. But, you know, it hits some people, and we know those people, and it's devastating. But it's not the same thing as just knowing that this force of nature is going to come through and level everything. You know, the tornadoes are so selective about what they hit that they wind their path of destruction, and it's terrible for those people who get hit, but it's not the same thing as seeing a hurricane wipe out an entire coastline, that hundreds of miles worth of stuff is just flooded and washed out. We're very fortunate that we don't have to deal with that. So, I feel for you, and I hope you guys are okay down there. So, let's see. And then, there's still more. All right. So do you have your 72 power pantry ready? Are you having Gen Con withdrawals? Not so much. It's not bad. I've got game night is coming up this week, and so I'm excited to go there and you know, tell war stories and share stuff that we've got and all this. So that'll be awesome. What was the most memorable cosplay you saw at Gen Con? The only one that I took a picture of, which was Stevani from Steven Universe. And I took a picture of Stevani because Jacob and Aiden weren't with me. This is one of the few times that we weren't hanging together during the con, and there was Stevani, and it was a perfectly done costume, and so I had to take a picture of her so I could send that over to them, because I knew they would appreciate that. And so that was my most memorable one, but there was lots of good ones. Let's see. Sarah Beth replies to Ron and says, stay safe, Ron. Absolutely. And then, Pat, DM Darks. Pat says, do you know how many Pokemon there are now? I don't know, like 900? Is it over 1,000 now? I know it was 150 in the first set, and then 150 in the second set, and now we've gone through, like, what, 6 waves of it? 8 waves of it? So we'd be at, like, 900 or 1,200, somewhere in that range. I'm going to bet it's just over 1,000. That's what I'm guessing. You don't have an answer for me. Pat says, there's a lot of Pokemon. God, no kidding. How many? 802. Lisa says it's 802, so I overshot by a little bit. But, all right. So by next week, my challenge is I need to list them all from memory. So we'll work on that. Next up is Sarah Beth. Sarah Beth says, hey, Mike, my Audible credits are building up, and I already pre-ordered Oathbringer. Can you recommend a book I should listen to? Epic and high fantasy, sci-fi, or true crime are my favorite genres. Ooh, recommend a book you should listen to. I'm bad about that. I'm not the reader I used to be. I mean, I still read, but, I don't feel qualified to recommend anything yet. My next book that I'm going to read is Wonder. So I don't know anything about it at all, except that my wife read it and said it is really good, and she said it is the next book I'm reading. So it is the next book I'm reading. I will be starting that this week. And she said it's not a long read, but I have to read Wonder. So I'm going to be doing that. I can recommend it based on my wife telling me that it's my next book I'm reading. She never does that. So I will tell you to do that one. The last book I read was Meddling Kids, which I really enjoyed. It was, you know, had some flaws here and there, but I really enjoyed the book. I thought it was a well-done take on the Scooby-Doo sort of thing, bringing it into a gritty look at what happens to the Scooby Kids. So I enjoyed Meddling Kids, but read Wonder on my wife's recommendation. So if it turns out to be terrible, blame Lisa. That's what you need to know. Let's see. Next is, Sarah Beth again. Would you host a foreign exchange student? And if so, from what country would be your first choice? I don't know. I don't know that we would right now. I mean, again, our house is hectic and we're not home often enough we're just glad to start getting kids out of the house, much less welcoming them back in. I mean, I can see us doing it, but, I don't really think it's something that I'm interested in right now. If I were going to host a student from another country, what would be my country of choice? I don't think I care. I mean, if I was going to make the decision to host somebody from another country, look, you know, the language thing is not going to be a huge barrier because, other countries, especially once they're sending out foreign exchange students, they're really good about getting people to learn English before they come here. They're multilingual in other nations from what I understand. So, I would be thrilled to host anyone. I think it would be exciting no matter what. I honestly don't think I can pick. I mean, we've known foreign exchange students, that have been, friends of my kids and we've hung out with them, gotten to know them from Germany, from India. The gal from India, she was awesome. Have I told you that story? I did. I told you how we took her trick or treating. I told you that story because she'd never been trick or treating before. She so badly wanted to go. And I mean, here she is, 18 years old, high school senior, and just was giddy as a 6-year-old to dress up as a witch and go around trick or treating because she'd never done it before. It was awesome. It was a really cool, meeting of cultures, and we had an awesome time with her. So anyway, I can see that being really fun. I don't have a preference. No, probably not something we would ever do. So, all right. Next up is, it's Kyle. Kyle says, and I think he's responding to Sarah Beth's request for books, but I just finished reading In the Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. I think I liked it. Have you read it? It's high fantasy world building. Okay, I certainly have not read it, but I've heard wonderful things about Patrick Rothfuss, and therefore I probably should. But Pat replies to Kyle and says, best work of fantasy I've read in quite some time. Apparently True Dungeon this year was based off of Patrick Rothfuss stuff. Cool. And then Sarah Beth also says, yeah, I haven't yet. We own it in hard copy, and you, Pat, and grad student Anna have all suggested it now, so I will download it. All right, cool. Good recommendation. I will put that on my list as well, because I don't have enough things on my reading list. So, awesome. All right, and then that's it. We are all done. So, I appreciate you guys showing up. I appreciate you listening, contributing, being a part of this thing. I love you guys, and it's been great. And I'll be back next week with maybe time travel, maybe Awesome in the 80s, and we'll do the American Werewolf in London. Or maybe I'm just a liar, and I'll put both of those off and do something completely different. You never know. But I appreciate you being here. We'll see you next week.